What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today on the show, rats! There's rats in the walls, in the sewers, on the subway. Why are there so many rats around, and are they the most villainous pests or just misunderstood? From plagues to pets, rats have shaped human civilization in a variety of ways. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, how come rats get blamed for everything? Joining me today is friend of the show, comedian and host of the podcast, Jeff Has Cool Friends, Jeff May. Welcome!
Hey, welcome. It's me, a rat.
It's you, a rat. Man, you pull off the human skin look great.
Yeah, most of my rat friends are in my legs.
Well, no, you know.
That's how I move.
I've seen this exact case so many times where top half, kind of like a rat tar, like not a centaur, but a rat tar, where it's like top half human, bottom half, a bunch of rats.
Yeah, a bundle of Dracula-like rats, yes.
Right, sort of like all, kind of like a Megatron made out of rats for the lower half.
That's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jeff, you actually suggested this topic. What is going on in your life that involves rats?
So I had a uninvited rat roommate in my house not too long ago. I was it's one of those ones where you start here and you're like, oh, I think we have mice. And then you see it and you're like, we don't have mice. We don't.
Yeah.
We don't have any mice. We do have at least a rat.
Right.
And, you know, we met a couple times. Mm-hmm. He was a little dodgy, but also bold.
Yeah.
And sorry for all of you friends of rats, but I got him.
You got him.
Because, yeah, we got him. Which I'm sorry, but also, like, I don't need my house to burn down if he's, like, chewing electrical wires or something.
You put a hit out on this rat, it sounds like.
You know, that would have been nice, but I actually ended up doing it myself.
Oh, God.
You know, like, instead of hiring an assassin to come in, you know, I will risk it myself and just really went for it, which is also scary because it turns out I'm terrified of things that skitter.
Yeah. Well, skittering is, I think the problem with skittering is that, you know, the skittery is up to something.
Yeah. On top of that, too, like when you think about skittering, it's the creepiest, most aggressive way to run away from something.
Yeah.
Like skittering is never at me. It's always away from me. And yet I'll clutch my pearl. If I see a cockroach, I'm going to clutch my
pearls. Oh, yeah. No, I'm a lover of most things considered pests. But a cockroach, the problem is once it's in my area, right, like a rat or a cockroach or even a mouse. It's like there is a certain like I've made eye contact with it, and now it's tap danced away, and it's so inappropriate. It's so antisocial to like aggressively tap dance away from me and be like, well, I'm in your house. Bye. It's upsetting.
He was at one point in time, they, I didn't mean to assume that right. rat's gender, was like in, because we have like a laundry room. And it has like the laundry room has basement energy, but it's connected to my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to go into the laundry room to do my laundry, I started like kind of knocking on the door because I didn't want to see the rat.
Right. Like, are you, in here doing rat
and
stuff?
And so then I realized
looking at
that, like,
rat,
I was
looking at rat pornography.
Looking at some rat titty. but I realized I was treating it like a slightly hostile roommate.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, sorry for coming in your room, man. I just got to do some laundry real quick. I'm not a fan of the rat. Telling people that a rat snuck into your house through like a vent or something, you might as well tell people that you grew a rat from all the pizza boxes that you yes. keep in your house. You know, that's the energy that having a rat in your house means. Like, people automatically assume that you are a pig.
Yeah.
That you are. Like an absolute slob.
That you sort of leave like a trail of food scraps directly to your laundry room and little signs yes. that says, welcome rat.
Yeah, like a little rat strip club.
Right,
in there,
right.
So that they could do that. But the reality is, it's to, you know, it's been cold in Los Angeles and rainy. And
yes.
that we must have had like a hole somewhere in our house.
Yeah.
That had to get plugged up.
Yeah, it's
and it snuck in. Like they sneak in because they're rats. Like,
they do, and they do use air vents. I had a rat in my air vent once, and this was like this. I think it was a brown rat, and it was large. It was large, and very aggressive. And the skittering aspect was interesting because, like, it was in the vents, so it would wake me up in the middle of the night with sort of this aggressive scratching and skittering. And what eventually worked was allowing my dog to just go ham on the rat vent area whenever she pleased. So she usually would like sleep in her crate because she's a well-trained puppy. But and this time I let her sleep on my bed so that she would just like every time the rat made a noise, she would spring up and start like screaming at this rat. Which would wake me up for sure. But in the long term, it was good because she terrorized this poor rat and basically trained the rat to like not be in my vents. Because like whenever it would make a sound in my vent, my dog would like slam into the vent and bark yeah. really loud.
If you're anywhere and something is like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
You're probably going to be like, I don't think I want to come back here.
Yeah. And I felt sorry for the rat, you know, like, because, again, I like rats in general. Obviously, when it's like in my vents pooping and keeping me awake at night, that's not tenable. But, you know, it's like I want to it's almost like, man, could I like build a rat hut? And the answer is no, because I didn't own this property. So there's no way I could build like a rat hut for the rat to live in. I would get in trouble with the city. So, but yeah, it's just not a fun situation when you've got a rat in your.
Yeah. Like
in your space.
Also, it's a good reminder that like there's a massive difference between like getting a pet rat and having it at your house.
Yes.
And an invasive, it's like a person. It's like having a person. Like if
the difference between
your spouse and
a home invader.
Yeah. And then there's another person just in your house. You're not just like, you know, every life is sacred.
Yeah.
You'd be like, this is a problem and we need to remedy it immediately.
I would construct a giant slab of wood and a hinge and a big metal bar and put a burger on it, an enticing burger on there.
And the burger would have like a nice. And it would like do the finger on under the nose.
Yeah, the aroma smell would form an anthropomorphic hand and lure the person over. Yeah, I mean, I think so. Like one of the things with rat control, right, is it is not great when it like falls upon us to try to get rid of rats from our places. One of the ideas of a more humane rat control is actually through like rat birth control, right? So instead of poisoning them, which is bad for the rats and bad for, you know, other animals, right? Like mountain lions, domesticated pets.
Feral cats,
like, yeah, it's terrible.
Poisoning. We were rescuing a colony of feral cats that were abandoned in a neighborhood, and one of them just straight up we found dead.
Yeah,
and like face down on the ground, no impact or anything like that. And we were like, well, some rat poison killed this cat.
Yeah. That's also like there was that owl, that poor owl, I think, in New York.
Yeah.
Kidnapped from, I think, the zoo and then escaped. And then its name was Flacco, I think. And I think it died. The cause of death was mostly attributed to like poison in the rodents that it would try to eat.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
those owl pellets would be weird coming out, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, not great. And so, you know, I mean, like, I think that the idea that we should, like, there are a few ways to control rat populations near humans that do not involve poison or, you know, mass killing. It would involve, like, creating sort of birth control for rats.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by wherever you're going with birth control, with rat birth control.
I mean, it's not like, it would not be like tiny rat condoms. It would be capturing rats, sterilizing them, or trying to put out baits that would have some kind of sterilizing substance in it so that the, then you would have rats that basically waste the time of other rats who are trying to mate with them and would reduce the rat population. I do like the idea of rat sex ed, though, where you just have like, you know, teaching rats about safe
rolling sex. Condoms on little rat bananas.
Yeah, tiny rat bananas. I do want to talk today about kind of this complex relationship we have with rats, because rats are really interesting animals. You know, they're highly intelligent. There are all these kind of emotions and behaviors in them that I think are very like humanizing, that they can be tickled. They seem to show care and empathy for other rats. They'll want to help a rat who's stuck in a bad situation, even if it doesn't seem to directly benefit themselves.
They're great chefs.
Sometimes if you put a rat on your head, it'll tug your hair. That makes you cook really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, who doesn't want that?
Yeah. If I could have a ratatouille that helps me do my taxes, that would be...
And a little lawyer, a little accountant,
right,
rat.
Right. Accountant rat who helps me do my taxes, rat who helps me keep deadlines, you know, like...
I would like a house cleaning rat.
Yeah. Ooh, like a rat where you can just like zone out and listen to podcasts, but the rat is like pulling on your hair and having you vacuum perfect.
That'd be
perfect.
On like, or like a rummage sale organization rat.
Yeah.
Where you can be like, oh, I got all this stuff. The rat knows what I need and what I don't need.
Yeah. Like a rat helping you simplify, a life coach rat. There's so many ratatouille opportunities beyond just cooking is our point. Like we need more variety of ratatouille. So let's talk a little bit about what is a rat. Rats are in the Rattus genus, which, you know,
not very
that,
creative,
right?
On, yeah, science's part.
Not really. This includes brown rats, black rats, domesticated pet rats, which are actually descendants from brown rats. And these are all in the Rattus genus. But there are some things that we call rats that are not really true rats. So pack rats, kangaroo rats, pouched rats, muskrats, none of these are in the Rattus genus. They're all rodents.
Snitches.
What's that?
Snitches.
Well, it depends, because I guess if you have a snitch who is a rat, right? Like, in if this,
that would have to be like a, that would be another Ratatouille.
That'd
thing.
Be a
like
different Ratatouille.
You get a snitch Ratatouille.
A snitch spirit. Ratatouille. That would be the. I feel like that's not the most ideal Ratatouille. Like a Ratatouille that helps you do your taxes, but then also reports you to the IRS.
Yeah, that's an inside rat, is what
an
it
inside
is.
Inside rat. Yeah, exactly. There are over 50 species of rats, including domesticated rats bred to be pets or rats bred to be used in labs. Rats are a cosmopolitan species found all over the world on every continent except for Antarctica because it's too cold. I feel that, right?
It'd be awesome if you were like, except for Europe.
Yeah, no, like, that's...
It's weird that they respect that border.
Well, we'll talk about Europe in a little bit.
We sure will.
But yeah, so they have become invasive on islands actually sort of close to Antarctica in the southern hemisphere, and they do threaten the nesting seabird populations there. Like when we think about rats as pests, we kind of think about them being in our homes or eating our grain stockpiles. Like I hate it when rats are like in my grain silos. One of the big things that is a problem with rats is being invasive in areas where they are not indigenous and outcompeting the native wildlife, because rats are very good at
survivors.
They are like amazing. They're intelligent. They are omnivorous. They will eat pretty much anything that can be eaten. They are also very fecund. They are very fertile and they have a lot of offspring. So they are fantastic survivors. I mean, it's interesting that we hate them so much because they kind of are very human-like in how successful they are. Like their ability to take advantage of resources, to colonize, to you know, kind of like exploit things and mess up the ecosystem where they are. It's very human-like.
I think it's important to note too that we are also pests.
Yeah. Well. Yes, I mean, depends on your perspective, but yeah, like if we are talking about our impact on ecosystems, I think very much we could be considered pests.
I'm viewing it from the Agent Smith perspective. Yeah,
that's I'm sure that's healthy. So yeah, the most infamous rat species, the ones you probably are most familiar with, are the black rat and the brown rat. So despite the names, black and brown rats are not like it's not really the coloration difference that is the most notable difference between the species, because black rats can be different shades of black, gray, or brown, and brown rats can be gray rather than brown. So the main difference in appearance is the size and the body shape. So brown rats are bigger and chunkier. Their tails are shorter than their overall body length, their snouts are boxier, and their ears are stubbier. And black rats are more slender, they have tails that are longer than their total body length, they have more pointed snouts, more sort of slender faces, and larger ears. So, yeah, that's how you tell like the difference if you care.
I feel like Los Angeles is really good at brown rats, yes. And New York is much better with black rats.
I think that's fairly accurate. Yeah. I mean, both of these guys are found pretty much all over the world. But
mine was I'm pretty sure he was a gray brown rat. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I was in New York in 2019 for Comic-Con. I had a panel and I was just kind of like exploring the area, and I got off the subway and I came up and immediately saw just like a black rat running around like a little park area, and I was like, ah, yes, metaphors. It's good to see. Like, it's definitely like beginning of a movie energy where you're like, there's a rat, you're in New York.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because it is used as this thing of like, ah, you're in New York because here's all the rats. And I mean, the reason that rats are drawn to New York is like the same reason that people are drawn to New York or major cities, right? It's because because there's a lot. I mean, they are drawn to where there are huge, dense populations of people because they like the same things we do. They like warmth, they like structures, and they like food, and they like our food. And they're omnivorous. They'll eat pretty much anything that we can eat. So, like, they love people. We may not like them, but they love us.
You know, it's so funny because, and I can guarantee we're going to get to this, but for those of you that are not aware of my previous career, I taught medieval history.
Mm-hmm.
I taught about the Middle Ages. I taught about everything that happened between the fall of Rome and the Renaissance. And so 1347 showed up and we did a whole unit on it. And hearing you say that to me is just giving me flashbacks of saying that to eighth graders. So it's like, it's very fascinating. So I'm like, oh yeah, they do that.
I'm so excited because I am not much of a historian. So I just did some, you know, research for this podcast. So I'm excited for you to be able to fill in the gaps or correct my mistakes.
The dust off my degree.
Yeah,
that I haven't used in 12 years. Yeah.
But yeah, like we kind of have this disdain for rats, but the reason they're so populated in areas where we live is because we produce waste and we build buildings, and they will eat our food and they will live in our buildings. And the best way to like sort of control the problem with rats is to, manage our waste, produce less food waste, have good building infrastructure. I think that is kind of all we can do in terms of, because like when we do things like poison rats and stuff, it doesn't actually really make that much of an impact on their population. And it just causes a lot of problems.
They're not getting the word out about the poison.
They kind of are, actually. Yeah. That's the thing. They're so smart is that they will test food sometimes and wait to see whether it has an effect, or they'll watch another rat test food and then wait to see if it has an effect on them. And then they learn that things can be poisonous, and then they will be careful about new food sources. There's actually a pretty insidious way sometimes we kill rats, which is with an anticoagulant. You give them the anticoagulant and they don't realize it because the effects take so long to set in that they don't realize it's poison. So even if they do the little testing thing and then they eat it, it takes a lot. There's a long delay in terms of the effects, but then the effects happen later and kills them in a pretty gruesome way.
With an anticoagulant, does that mean you're basically just like giving them like an Ebola virus?
Sort of like it's
not a virus.
I mean, it kind of works like a snake bite works in some cases, where like some snake bites can have a coagulant, like a more likely to form blood clots or be anticoagulants, and the anticoagulant effects can cause like internal bleeding. It's pretty horrific.
There
are real problems that we face from rats, like in terms of spread of disease. And we, like you kind of hinted at, Jeff, we cannot get through this episode without talking about plague, because it's such a huge part of human history. And when people think of rats, like they think of plague. And it is true that rats can inadvertently spread plague. We're going to take...
I was going to say, so if I may, and of course, I apologize if I'm getting anything wrong here, but so essentially like rodents.
Mm-hmm.
So like we give rats because rats are social.
Yes.
The reality is all of the cases of plague that hit in modern times are not usually provided by rats, actually. And first and foremost, it's important to note that rats are not the ones that are delivering the Yersinia pestis bacteria to people. It's almost always going to be fleas.
Yes.
The fleas that are hanging out on the rats, they're the ones, they have rat blood in their inside of them that is contaminated. They jump on us, they bite, they then vomit that blood back into our open wound.
A little bit of back spit. Yeah.
A little bit of the Yersinia pestis bacteria, and that's how it happens. Most often comes through, like in the American Southwest.
Yeah, prairie dogs, actually.
From prairie dogs. Yes.
Yeah, because there's a reservoir in prairie dogs, whereas there is not, you know, like the I think our ability to kind of like do hygiene and use antibiotics to treat plague when it pops up. Like it is not, it doesn't spread so easily to major cities nowadays, which is very good. But this did not always, this was not always the case. So we're going to take a quick break actually, but then when we get back, we are going to talk about plague and the discussion over how much blame do rats have for the plague and what even is plague? How does it work? And Jeff, this is such kismet. I had no idea that this is what you taught, but it's as if
that I taught an entire unit yes. on plague.
I'm so excited. I don't plan this, but maybe it's like the rats are just communicating through me to bring this moment about. A great cosmic rat, you know, using us like puppets. Anyways, the point is, we'll be right back. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the plague.
Yeah.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
So, Jeff, gosh, I'm so excited because, like, again, history is not like my strong point, but I did do a little bit of homework before this episode. But I'm hoping you can fill in some of the details here, or at least correct me if I say something egregiously wrong or mispronounce something. So the plague, right? It's like not, I think when we think about, or when we think about plague, I think a lot of people just think about the Black Death, but that was not the only plague. It was a bad one. It was a big one for sure. But there were three plague pandemics, and one was relatively recent. There was the first plague pandemic from about 540 to 750. There was the second plague pandemic from about 1330 to 1855-ish. And then the third plague pandemic from about 1855-ish to 1960. Is that about right?
It might be. I take an interesting form of umbrage with the fact that we went roughly 1330 to 1855. That's a big span,
yeah,
to say it's a pandemic. But that's not me correcting you. That's just me being like, in my head, I'm like, oh, that can't be right.
No, the reason, so there is a little bit of, you know, I think that is sort of the general span in terms of like how they categorize these pandemics. But it's not like there were a bunch of pandemics within that. And it's kind of like there's some disagreement on how exactly one should categorize these time periods, right? Like this is, it's not like, it's a little bit, it's kind of like a taxonomy with animals where it's like, sometimes it's like, well, where is exactly the cutoff with where one starts and where the other begins?
It's important to note that the plague that is the famous plague. It's important because plague in general just means an epidemic or however we want to say it, a pandemic or whatnot that is it sweeps across a massive amount of the population. And again, if you're a pedant listening to this, jumping into the comments, tell me I'm wrong. I'm probably wrong about some stuff. It's been 12 years since I've taught this. I have a degree, obviously, in history. My minor was in biology, and actually the focus on that was infectious diseases. So I do bring a little bit in here, but I'm not a scientist.
Plague heads are coming for you, Jeff.
They might. So I do need to classify that because, you know, I haven't been a teacher of this since 2012. But essentially the one we talk about, the main one, because that's the one that everybody discusses, right? If you're talking like 557 or whatever, you know, you're talking, you know, that's an earlier one. That's not the one that's super famous. Roughly, we look at the period, and it's generally considered that 1347, that's like,
yeah,
that's when it hit.
That's the Black Plague, right?
Yeah, that's the Black Death. And the Black Death is, you know, it really comes down due to the growth of towns and trade. So the growth of a market economy is what led to this epidemic. When you talk about where Europe was in the 1300s and when you were establishing trade routes and you look at the areas that were affected the most, you see that it's coming in into these trading towns, these trading centers, and then it is being spread because the people that got infected by those fleas from those rats in those areas are then going to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And when all of your cures and blames are like about God, you're kind of screwed. The results of plague created the modern world.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that is a very ugly benefit, because there are massive benefits that happened as a result of the Black Death.
Yeah, it's like a silver or sort of blackish, bloody lining to the plague.
It's probably, I would say that Black Death has the silverest lining in of all pretty much horrible events that have happened. And I know that that sounds really careless because, you know, estimates go from anywhere from 12 to 30% of the population were wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
But the middle class, RIP, was created around this time. The church took a massive hit in its influence and power. The church no longer became the global dominator that it once was. The nobility and feudalism started to crash heavily. Like, it also, the Renaissance is birthed of this. The awakening of science and technology and medicine is starting to grow. And it really all comes from the fact that, like, the failures of the survivors and like the wealth that was accumulated and the culling of the population, which is such a dystopian sci-fi thing that they do.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, half the time, if you're ever on like an episode of Hypecast or something with Tom Ryman and David Bell or whatever, and they're like, hey, there's another sci-fi movie coming out. And they're like, we have to kill 8% of the population.
The thing is, like, the thing about like the idea of culling is that we don't, I mean, like, I definitely agree that there were direct results of the Black Death and the plague that resulted in good societal changes, but we don't have the counterfactual, right? Like, if it hadn't happened, we could have also had really good societal changes, and we just don't know what would have happened.
Yes, but we can also use historical patterns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could guess.
You can make a pretty strong hypothesis that there are certain things that would have been maintained, and the status quo at that time was pretty strong. And when you look at, you know, warfare being what it was, and I don't know, it's, the church would not have lost the power that it did,
right?
And the middle class would not have risen the way it did,
right?
We can't say for sure but we can say, judging from the patterns of societies at that time, judging from the fact that, you know, Islam had been stopped at Spain as opposed to crossing over and then spreading all the way across. Like, there are certain tentpole, or if we want to go pop culture, canon events that had happened up to that point, which had established patterns in there. Like, if Islam had spread, maybe science and technology would have moved faster.
Right.
At that time, but it didn't. It was, it was, you know, it was stopped. Charles Martel stopped him at Tours and pushed him back. So at that point in time, then you have to be like, all right, well, the plague caused certain things to happen.
Yeah.
And those things led to that immediate and it's like, it's not that gradual. It's a relatively immediate shift. When you talk about wages going exponentially higher, a lot of that came from the fact that people weren't supplying the labor that they needed. So the market equilibrium for that went up. But also past that, like, there was a lot of superstition that was leading people to not work with, like, the irony being that, like, the people that worked with dead bodies were the safest people. And they also were, like, the most well paid.
Why were they the safest? Did they, like, practice better hygiene? Or was it that, like, by the time someone was dead, the fleas were gone?
Bingo. Yeah, it's exactly that. So, like, fleas don't, they don't hang out on a dead body. They don't like a cold body. So they would leave.
Yeah.
So, like, I also think there was,
I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there were other jobs that people saw as potentially really dirty, but that actually actually resulted in lower death rates, like people who would clean, like, sort of the sewage systems, which were sometimes just like canals through the streets, and people would wash more regularly when they did that because it was stinky. And the plague didn't. Like, there was this idea that foul odors might cause illness. And while there's something really kind of interesting about that, right, where it's like there's a bit of a correlation. In this case, like, plague was not spread through feces. And so people who worked directly with feces, well, not always. Some, like, there are certain types of plague. We'll get into that a bit, where there is a type of plague that could potentially be spread from the bodily fluids of people, but the main spread was through fleas.
Yeah.
And so people who would work with, like, you know, the sewage, they would be washing a lot because it was gross, and so that washing actually may have had a protective effect where they didn't get as many fleas.
It's a lot like how religions that forbade pork, you had a significant drop in trichinosis.
Yeah, just by chance, essentially.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, okay, well,
either by chance or
that,
either by chance or people made a correlation, but they didn't know why this happened, and then it became sort of religious doctrine because it, like, there were certain recipes for medications and stuff where you would say a prayer as you were doing it, and that actually provided the timing for like a chemical reaction. And it had obviously nothing to do with the prayer incantation, but that kept time because people didn't have stopwatches.
Yeah, it's wild, like, the stuff that happened. Like, there were, like, touring groups of flagellants that would, like, they would just go to different towns whipping themselves.
Yeah.
And being, but they were also, like, generally, like, scummy people that would go by and would self-flagellate in order to, like, absorb the sins of the community.
Perverts.
You know, like, because the thing about it was, is, like, the church was the center of everything at the time, and the church fell apart during the Black Death. And the papacy had already sort of revealed itself to be self-serving as they had relocated to Avignon in France at the time. So during the plague,
always the Pope, taking a charter plane off to Avignon as soon as stuff hits the fan. Well,
so, like, there was the great schism of where they moved the papacy from Rome to Avignon, which caused Rome to, like, fall apart anyway. And then, you know, it was really just a king buying a pope and having him live in his area.
Lap pope.
So, So it's one of those things where, like, the papacy, people were already like, it doesn't seem very godly that you guys just decide that you can move it. And then when this shit's going down and the churches are closing, they're refusing to give last rites, while these rock star flagellants are walking around and they're like, we'll do it. And they became, you know, you hate to say it, but like, they're like the Tea Party of
very populist
that era, where like they're being populist. They're the ones that are diagnosing and recognizing problems. They don't have an actual cure for it,
no,
but by recognizing it, people felt seen. That's kind of one of the ways that Trump got elected.
Yeah.
If you really think about it, of he sees a problem and diagnosed it the way Hillary didn't. He didn't have a plan for it.
No.
But just by seeing people, people were like, oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I think that, like, I mean, obviously there are a lot of there are a lot of scapegoats during the plague times. There's a ton of anti-Semitism because, you know, whenever there's a social problem, it's just like, well, let's slap some anti-Semitism and see how that works.
Poison the well term,
yeah,
was really popularized because of the plague and the pogroms that would happen because of the plague.
Yeah. But really what the plague was caused by was Yersinia pestis, which you mentioned earlier. Like, in every case, in like, regardless of your feelings about like the years that you categorize these plagues, the first plague pandemic, second plague pandemic, and the third plague pandemic, the most recent one, all caused by this Yersinia pestis bacteria. There are different forms, or there are different types of infection that this can cause. It can be pneumonic, which is lung infection, septicemic.
That's the coughing and sneezing one.
Exactly.
That's the pneumonic is the one that spreads like wildfire.
Yes, because that one doesn't spread just through fleas. That can also spread through body fluids and even droplets.
Sputum. Is I think the words,
yes,
that they used. But yeah,
there's also septicemic, which is a blood infection, and bubonic, which is I think the most well-known one. And the bubonic is infection of the lymph nodes, and those lymph nodes, when they swell, they form the bubos, the like gross, gnarly, grape-like bubbles on your skin, which is really these like super inflamed lymph nodes.
So bubonic plague is the one that we equate for the most part with. And the two major ones were pneumonic and bubonic at the time.
Yeah.
Those were the ones that people would see. Obviously, pneumonic, you see somebody coughing near you. That is going to give us a much more recent example of a pandemic.
Yeah.
That you have to be, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you can see now, and like why I was really on edge, because I also, when I was a teacher, I got swine flu.
Oof.
I got swine flu from the kids. I taught about plague. And so when the pandemic had hit in 2020, I was like, and everyone's like, masks don't work. I was like, let me explain to you how these, like, I was like, look, I'm not an expert, but I do, yeah. I am an expert in this specific thing. So, but bubonic plague, it became the one that, like, was the visible, like, oh, scenario. And people, the one thing people don't forget, like, it wasn't the death sentence that we think it was at the time. People did survive it. There are instances where there was, like, one town that, like, clearly had immunity to it.
Yeah.
Where they had gone through, and, like, there's also been fascinating studies about survivors of plague having their descendants having an immunity to the HIV virus.
That's really
which
interesting.
Is a weird phenomenon that I'm not smart enough to
some
explain.
Kind of epigenetic change, maybe.
Yeah, like literally changing DNA to do that, and that's wild to me. But and again, I cannot stress enough that even though I feel like I'm sounding smart, I'm a very dumb man. So don't ask me.
We're all dumb dumbs struggling in this big world.
So like when you talk about your lymph nodes, the ones that we most often think are right to the sides of your throat, yeah. right under the back of your jaw.
Yeah.
Your armpits and unfortunately your groin.
Your groin. Sort Those of in the you know where like where the Barbie the doll hinges are. It's
yeah,
there.
The V.
Yeah. But yeah, we actually have many more lymph nodes than that. We have we have like a pair at the back of our neck. We have a pair like there's both a pair like under your chin and then at the base of your neck, like you said, armpits. We also have lymph nodes in the legs. But yeah,
but they're clustered. They're most visible clusters are on in the, those little folds, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And you'll feel them. Like if you ever had an infection, sometimes you'll feel them and they actually swell up a bit because they get inflamed because they are kind of like the waste management centers of the body where like they will help with the flow of inflammatory cells and then like when sort of like inflammation goes down, a lot of that material is carried into the lymph nodes and so like it is kind of like they are very reactive when you have an infection, but that's generally a good thing, right? Because like you do want it's a sign that your immune system is working.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that the average human body cannot handle the speed at which the Yersinia pestis bacteria replicates, so therefore it's basically and I'm trying to find a way to use this without using another disease, but it's essentially giving your lymph nodes a cancerous form of replication almost, and I know that's not technically correct, but
it's the exponential over... right, it's the exponential growth of the bacteria. It's like there are so we can, especially today, we treat a lot of things with antibiotics, a lot of bacterial infections with antibiotics, and so a lot of times like bacterial infections are not such a big deal because it's like, all right, we take an antibiotic and that clears it up. There are some bacterial infections where it's like the rate of replication of the bacteria are so fast, even our modern antibiotics can struggle to take care of the infection. So things like necrotizing fasciitis is a type of bacterial infection, usually from like flesh wounds, where it's just the rate of the bacterial growth is so fast that it can be hard to treat it with antibiotics. I mean,
you know what isn't one of those though? Plague.
Yeah.
Plague is a routine cycle of antibiotics will eliminate.
Nowadays, and it is something that is highly treatable. You just do have to get it treated because if you don't, it'll have the same effect as someone living, you know, in the dark ages.
It's certainly one of those things. I see this happen a lot on social media where somebody will share a story about how somebody got plague.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix Man gets plague.
And people panic.
And they go, oh, like we need this again.
Yeah, it happens every year. A few people get plague in the U.S.
About 12 people a year.
Yeah.
Get plague in the U.S. It is it's funny because of how dominant it was back in the. It's like Michael Jordan playing for the Wizards. You're like, man, you were dominant at one point in time. But I'm just not impressed.
Yeah, there's a few reasons that plague is no longer a huge concern. One is like antibiotics. That the power of antibiotics is really incredible. Also, hygiene. The fact that we human beings are no longer covered in fleas and body lice pretty much at all times like we used to be. And so the combination of like hygiene and antibiotics, like changes in our hygiene practices and in our, people would not regularly bathe, a lot. Like they would do some washing. Like it's not true that they just like would never wash themselves. Right. There would be some forms of washing, of course. Like people were not so fundamentally different, the olden times, like in the Middle Ages or medieval period, that they also did not want to reek and be stinky and gross. But it's not like they had showers, and like heating up enough bath water, getting enough bath water to take a bath was really hard. So people would do things like wipe themselves down, essentially, right? Like They do like little bird baths, like to kind of like wipe themselves down to clean themselves. But having like, it's not like everyone had soap. That was not like, you know, something that everyone could afford to have. Certainly, people didn't just all have indoor plumbing. That was the mass availability of plumbing, of like water.
Explaining chamber pots.
Yes.
To eighth graders was real fun.
Oh, they must have enjoyed it.
something to wit too, which we had mentioned earlier, and I forgot to mention that, like, obviously, like, feces doesn't carry plague. Rats don't hate feces.
That's true.
and so that's actually one of the problems with sort of the rats and how it was spread, is that as you had said, essentially you'd have ditches, like sewage was ditches in the streets that people would empty their pots into, and the rats fucking loved that. That's like a stew for a rat. Yeah. And so in that regard too, like that is how a lot of people would, you know, literally the process of shooing away a rat
could be
the thing that would have given
you. And actually, like, even if it was like, well, we can kill rats and that should help with the plague, right? Well, when a rat dies, where do the fleas go?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, they're not going to stick around, so they're going to move.
So, like, in fact, a lot of plagues were preceded by something called rat fall, where it was like a bunch of rats dying, and then you started seeing plague in people because the rats would get the plague first, and they'd start dying, and then when the rats die, the fleas jump to somewhere else, which was often humans, because they live near humans, and so you would get this kind of, like, very notable rat die-off before a plague outbreak. But something that is really interesting is, like, the commonly understood knowledge is that rats were the main drivers of plague and were the drivers of the Black Death. But there is a more recent sort of method of research that is examining this, and it's not questioning whether rats transmit the plague. Absolutely, we know that. We know that rats carry plague and can transmit it to humans and can definitely either spark a plague or contribute to a plague. But the question is, were rats the main culprits behind the Black Death plague?
That's interesting. I'm interested to see where this is going.
Yeah, so this is covered by a National Geographic article by Michael Greshko, which highlights a paper in PNAS called Human Ectoparasites and the Spread of Plague in Europe During the Second Pandemic by Dean Crower, Wallow, and Schmid. So these researchers used these models to kind of plot out essentially expected human versus rat-caused propagation of plague. So, like, if you... They looked at, like, okay, if it was primarily rat to human propagation of plague or human to human propagation of plague, what would it look like in this model that they created? And then compared that to historical records of mortality patterns during the second plague pandemic, during, like, different kind of plague outbreaks, different cities. And they found that not in all, but in most cases that they examined, the human spread model, like primarily it being from human to human, was a better fit for historical mortality records than rat to human driven.
That's interesting. I obviously, I'm not an expert and I'm not studying that. I think that that also does kind of feel like it has a slightly semantic point to it, which is like, well, once it got onto the humans, they spread it faster. It's like, well, yeah, we hang out with humans more than we hang out with rats. But the fact that the Yersinia pestis bacteria lays essentially dormant in a rat's body, it doesn't particularly kill them the way it kills us. Obviously, like, they're going to have a greater efficacy in doing that as opposed to the humans who are like, oh, yeah, these swellings in here, people are like, I'm out, I'm gone.
No, you know, I mean, like, it's an unexpected thing, right? But, like, the idea is not necessarily that I think it's like it's not necessarily semantic, because it is the idea of like what, because if it's kind of tracking like the patterns of the Black Death and the plague in terms of like, was it like these human sort of social and travel patterns driving plague, or was it that, you know, you had, say, like a rat population in this area that was the one that like triggered the plague or drove the plague? And in terms of like, I think that the interesting aspect of this is like, obviously it's not like disproving that rats can cause or exacerbate plague in areas. It is kind of figuring out what exactly, like what drove specific plague outbreak.
Oh yeah.
And
it's trade routes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's absolutely trade. And so that's a point. That's a part of it, is that, you know, yes, humans did that, but also it's important to note how many rats like to hang out on trade ships.
No, I mean, that's a really complicating factor. I mean,
yeah.
Well, rats and trade routes, like trade routes determined the where rats ended up, because rats are not, it's not like rats suddenly popped up on every continent in the world. Rats probably originated, I mean, I think they may have originated in Southeast Asia or China, and then they eventually got into all corners of the route of the world through human trade. So if you're looking at trade routes, right, it's going to be hard to tease apart whether the humans on the boat were spreading plague or whether the rats on the boat were spreading plague, because there was not a boat that didn't have rats on it at this time.
It's important to see too, because obviously, like when I would teach about trade and you would talk about like, look, it's the answer for all trade is water. Like water is your trade inlet. So like your highways. And if I may kind of branch off for a split second, sure. I would actually compare, because this was, you know, before 2012 and before, I would compare towns and cities to malls. And you would say, like, if you name, pick a mall, like imagine a mall in your head, and anybody who is listening, picture your local mall if it's still open, and you will know that it is among two major trade routes. And by say trade routes, I mean highways.
Mm-hmm.
So like malls are almost always wedged between two major highways. Los Angeles has a slightly different scenario on that, because it's a more of a whatever
endless web like, of tangled yes. intersections.
But for most people, like if you live in, you know, Massachusetts, and you're like, oh, the Auburn Mall, like we, because that was ours, the Auburn Mall. And I'd be like, look, there's the Mass Pike, there's 290, there's 395, there's Route 20. Right in the middle of those intersections is a mall. And you would do that with every major mall in an area. And you'd be like, here's where the two highways intersect. There's a mall.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger the highway, the more successful the mall. So that same thing, waterways were the highways of history, obviously. And so the more waterways you had, if you look at it, you're going to say, obviously, the more trade. But that's also going to show you the more plague deaths.
Right.
And
the more rats.
Which is why Italy got hit so brutally, is because they were the trade center of mm-hmm. Europe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you talk about, you know, the Lombard leagues and all that stuff that went through there and all the trade battles and wars that were going on.
Yeah, and also Italy used to be a bunch of different countries ruled by like incredibly wealthy families. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone thinks Italy's super old, and it's like, that was like 1880 or something.
Yeah, I mean, like, definitely stuff is super old here, because like there's, the buildings still exist. But yeah, Italy is a unified country is relatively recent, from the 1800s.
Yeah. Italy and Germany are incredibly young countries.
Yes.
Just they happen to be existing on incredibly ancient.
Yeah, younger than the US.
Oh yeah, by a century.
Yes.
But when you see like Italy got decimated, and then you look at like all the different trade porting cities in all these different areas, and they got absolutely destroyed. It's actually one of the reasons that the crust of Britain got absolutely decimated, because mm-hmm. of all the trade. Like islands got hit real bad because, you know, there's no escape really. Right.
Yeah. And I think like when you're looking at like whether it absolutely follows trade routes, but then that doesn't really inform us too much about whether it was humans or rats, right? Like you could say like, well, humans caused it because we're the ones on the boats. But when we're talking in terms of sort of an epidemiological perspective, it's like, well, yeah, is it from rat to human or human to human? And so what these researchers are contending is that while it doesn't account for all of the outbreaks, like a lot of outbreaks at this time may have been mainly like driven from human, like direct human to human transmission rather than rat to human. Even if the rat to human initiated it, there may have been greater amounts of like human to human transmission once the ball got rolling.
Yeah, I think the rats are the match and the forest fire happened no matter how big the flame was off the match.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
So one last thing I want to talk about in terms of rats is there's this really interesting thing, which is that because rats are so closely tied to humans in terms of they love us. They love our buildings. They love our food. And anywhere humans go, pretty much rats will follow. Can actually give us clues in terms of human history, archaeological clues. When we can't, say, use like direct evidence from humans, we can actually examine rats, you know, rat bones, in order to understand what humans were doing at the time, because the rats would be essentially hanging around the humans. So there's a study by Swift et al. That looked at rat bones found on Polynesian islands, and analysis of these bones allowed researchers to actually infer the diet of humans from 2,000 years ago, because the rats were understood to have probably eaten a lot of our scraps. And so if you find these rat bones that have sort of interesting sort of composition in an area of the island, you can actually kind of infer like what kind of agriculture were we doing? Were people eating a lot of fish, or were they eating a lot of sort of, fruits and vegetables and stuff? And so, and the reason you would use rat bones and not human bones is just because of the abundance of rat bones. Rats are super abundant, and they can provide a huge amount of archaeological samples over vast periods of time.
So many bones. We love a rat bone.
Yeah.
And again, like, it's one of those things where we came in here and like, obviously there's a lot of negativity about rats. Mm-hmm. I get it. Like, I understand. I don't feel comfortable when I see a rat.
Well,
I feel like if I go over someone, like there are also like, and this is weird, not to be, not to insult any listeners, but like rat ownership is like right on a par with snake ownership with me. Where like when I know somebody that has one of those animals, I'm like, I don't think we need to hang out. maybe a little judgmental.
I like them. I don't have a rat or a snake, but if someone owns a rat or a snake, I want to pet the rat. Well, I don't want to pet the snake. I want the snake to just, I want to chill with the snake because I don't think the snake likes to be pet. But I'm into it. I don't like, to me, the problem with owning a rat to me is I feel like I would make an emotional connection to this rat, and the rat's lifespan is pretty short. It's like 2 to 4 years. And that just feels, because like apparently rats get really like attached to you, and like they will snuggle up to you and come when you call their name and stuff. And that's like, it's like, okay, so essentially this is a small trash dog. And so if it's got such a short lifespan, I feel like it would destroy me.
Yeah. Every 2 years you have to make a cross to that rainbow bridge.
Yeah.
Post.
Yeah.
And you're like,
no, that's too much. That's too much for me. But look, I understand the appeal of them as pets because they are, I mean, you can tickle them.
Snuggly little guys.
You can tickle them. And then they, I mean, we can't necessarily hear these squeaks because they're so high pitched, but you can tickle them and then they make really high pitched squeaks because they're essentially giggling. And that's adorable.
Yeah. And then, you know, they wipe out a massive population of like carrying horrible diseases.
And also,
take little dumps by my laundry.
Well,
and I don't like that.
Well, you
I don't
know,
like that. I had to take a little dust buster and suck up some turds that were next to my.
Who among us hasn't taken a dump near Jeff's laundry, though? Well,
that is fair. I do have a rotating scenario where that does happen.
Anyways, Jeff, before we go, we got to play a little game called Guess Who's Squawking, the Mystery Animal Sound Game. Every week I select a sound for you, and you, the listener, and you, the guest, try to guess who is making the sound. It can be any animal in the world. The hint for this one is this is a very common sound, so the trick is more about the timing. Got any guesses?
I'm gonna guess it's I think we used to call them peepers, the little frogs. Little frog.
That is a very good guess. This is actually a cricket, but it has been slowed down significantly. So this is the sound that a cricket chirp makes, and we're not just slowing it down to trick you. Although that's definitely part of it, and I love tricking people. But part of it is this concept that something like a cricket may experience the world in a different way that we do in terms of like the idea is that there is a rate at which their brains can process information that is a lot slower. And so when they would experience the world, things would actually kind of be slowed down in a crickety way. It's hard to know what it would be like to be a cricket because they're just so incredibly different. It's not like avataring a human consciousness inside a cricket body.
No, you'd have to like rub your legs together to get laid. That's
well,
a weird thing.
Essentially, yes. So crickets use stridulation to produce their chirping sound, which is rubbing these textured parts together like their legs. And male crickets chirp to attract females as well as warn males away from their territory. Weirdly, sometimes they also will chirp after mating as a way to encourage the female to kind of like stick around and lay her eggs rather than just go off and mate with another male immediately. So very romantic.
Yeah, I always like to not to make this episode about things that have been in my house, but like, you know, whenever a cricket gets in the house, and it starts chirping and you're like, you're not going to get laid in here, man.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. What are you doing? Like, get out of here.
This isn't speed dating for crickets. It's a laundry room with a pile of rat turds in it.
Yeah. It's just two humans and a rat. You're not going to get anything out of this.
Right. That would be a great name for like a singles bar, though. Two humans and a rat.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like every third person would get side-eyed pretty hard in there.
Yeah, but you know, like, if we could have like a Ratatouille for dating, right? Like a Ratatouille wingman. I guess that was in the movie.
That would make my life so much easier. Oh my God, if I could have a Ratatouille for dating. I think a lot of men have tried that. And right. Those are called the rats are called pickup artists.
Right, exactly. We've already got
I'm not
those.
Gonna I'm not gonna insult rats.
No.
By comparing them to mystery.
Like,
but
I think if you put a rat on your head, just a normal rat, not even a Pixar Ratatouille rat, just a normal rat, you would still be more attractive to women than if you listen to a pickup artist.
And that's your peacocking.
Yeah.
Putting the rat on your head. They'll be like, what's that rat on your
you
head?
You will
about?
Be
like, I don't know.
I can Hold guarantee on, you this.
You about it.
I can guarantee you this. You will be noticed if you put a rat on your head. So here is another sound for you to guess. This the hint for this one is it gets its name from the sound it makes, not for sitting at the cool kids table in high school. All right, Jeff, you got any guesses?
Was the sound I was listening for that little like knocking?
Yes.
Oh. Urkel?
Yeah, it's Urkel. You got it.
Did I guess that? Right? I mean, no, that was I couldn't even figure out. Like, I was so focused on the hint that I was like, not from the cool kids table. I got nothing.
You did guess
Kookaburra.
Kookaburra. All right. Is it Steve Urkel or Kookaburra? Well, we'll find out next time on Creature Feature. Jeff, thank you so much for joining. Where can people find you?
Thanks for having me. Well, I am at Hey There Jeffro, HeyThereJeffro on all social media, including my YouTube. My YouTube, every Wednesday, I open up packs of trading cards on camera. And Katie, it is the most fun thing
I've
ever
done. That sounds very fun.
It's so fun and people really like it. So I'm going to keep doing it. But you can check that out. I do, some would say too many podcasts, but not me. I have shows like Jeff Has Cool Friends, which you had mentioned earlier. I do a great show called Nerd with Dre Alvarez and Ugg Fine with Kim Kral. Those are all available at patreon.com/JeffMay for early access to uncensored episodes with bonus content. Or you can get them for free otherwise. I do Tom and Jeff Watch Batman with Tom Reinman of Gamefully Unemployed. And I do a lot of shows with Adam Todd Brown on the You Don't Even Like podcast network, such as You Don't Even Like This Show, You Don't Even Like Sports, and You Don't Even Like Sports Live every Wednesday at 4:00 on his YouTube. I also do a live stand-up show called Mint on Card the second Friday of every month at Blast from the Past on Magnolia in Burbank, California. It is a comedy show in a toy store for free. It's my favorite. I have a lot of really fun things that I do, and I love my little life that I get to do, and I get to work with lovely people like Katie Golden, brilliant and charming and making great, great shows. So I love that I get to do that.
Well, thank you for that. That's very kind. And yeah, podcasts are kind of like rats. Like, once you've got one, probably got a whole bunch of other ones too.
I'm infested with podcasts. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. And if you're enjoying the show and you leave a rating or review, that's greatly appreciated. I read every single one of them. And thanks to the Space Cossacks for their super awesome song, Exolumina. Creature Features, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one she has just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or hey, guess what? Wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm not your mom. Can't tell you what to do. You gotta live your own life, make your own decisions, your own mistakes. Can't let a Ratatouille do everything for you. You know, at a certain point, you got to pick yourself up by your own pants and make your own decisions.
Learn to cook those reviews. This is actually something that I will say, and this is something that I think our mutual friend Logan Trent has started doing when he guests on podcasts. Mm-hmm. Folks, please go rate and review this podcast. Leave a comment. All of those free things, these things are free for you to do. To leave a review, to give a rate, comment, to subscribe, to notifications bell thing. The free stuff helps get these people paid better.
It puts food on my family and for my mini rats that I
for your mini rats. Feeding. Like, it's such a free thing you could do. Like, just do that.
Yeah. Like, I have literally hundreds of mouths to feed, all the rats that I am.
So many rats and horny crickets.
Horny crickets, rats. My apartment is so full of life and fun and
Italian
laughter.
Traitors.
live, laugh, love, feed all the rats in live, my apartment. Live, laugh,
louse.
Live, laugh, louse. Perfect. See you next Wednesday.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.